is coming from a somewhat weird convention, so let me just clarify it. So the 1 over square root versus the 1 over v just depends that whether you want to scale phi when you do the continuous limit or whether you don't. I don't see any reason for having different dimensions for phi and scaling phi, so I would put a 1 over v here instead of 1 over square root of v. But this was a confusion. The important thing is we always do the sum goes to v here, just by dimension. All right, so last time, we defined our scalar field. We expanded in modes. And then we did just a long review of how you get these creation and annihilation operator. These guys are time independent. In general, they depend on the vector k here. And then for flat space, we get that the time dependence is just, you know, negative frequency mode, positive frequency mode, and the 1 over square root of 2 omega here. And then the condition for vacua would be just say that the amount of vacua that is annihilated by all the a minus, the annihilation operator. Now we could have started directly. Could have started directly by saying, now essentially what we'll do for the rest of this class by saying I'm just going to expand directly this guy into modes. With a 1 over square root of 2 here by convention, I have a minus k times some, say, mode, which I don't know. Let's start here, e to the ikx. And the so you could just say, I'm going to take my scalar fields and operator. I'm going to expand it this way. Again, these are annihilation and creation. But in general, I don't know what the mode functions are. Okay? Just from the equation of motion from phi, you can figure out what this guy goes like. It's just the equation for motion from vk is just minus v dot dot k plus omega. Essentially, it's the same as the equation of motion for the mode, the whole mode phi k here. So it's just a Klein-Gordon equation with frequency sem square. Okay? Right. So this is, so you could just start like this, and then you can define the operator pi, which is just the derivative of phi with respect to time. And essentially, it's the whole, it's the same thing. So I'm going to skip all the factor, except that now the modes here have a time derivative. So this is a minus and a plus. Okay, so this is usually, this is going to be our starting point from now on. And so in general, you have some generic modes. And then what we do is we postulate that these guys are creation and annihilation operator. So that's equal to, let me get the factor right, delta k minus k prime. So that's like the first thing we need to give you, that and the equation of motion. And then we also just impose that the field themselves, phi and pi, are equal to I delta k plus k prime. Okay? Note the slight difference here between the I factor and the minus signs, but otherwise, very similar. Let me check I have all the correct definition here. Looks all good. All right, any questions? This is just a basic recap. So last time we just said we're going to expand like this. Now the idea though is that for the flat space solution, so if I'm, this is a frequency for if you're exactly in flat space. So in general, you can have a different equation here if you're not in flat space. But if you're exactly in flat space, you see that the solution for vk is just some constant e minus I omega kt. Okay? And right, so this is just, you know, this is just the wave equation. So this, in general, the solution is just e to minus I omega kt, where the frequency is here. And the only thing then you have to figure out is what is this constant normalization. And there's an easy way to do this because we demand, essentially, the normalization of the modes, vk, are always fixed by this commutation relation. Okay? So if you just, that is, if you just put, plug in phi and pi, these two expressions here, and this equation, and use this one, then you'll find that there's a normalization condition that the modes must satisfy. Okay. So I'm skipping this step, but you can check this easily, and you may have seen it already. But essentially, these guys there's a normalization condition. And that is that the derivative of vk times v, probably there's a star here, minus vkt times the derivative of vk. And you can work out what it has to be equal to. And in my convention here, it's equal to 2i. So this is actually a very important equation, because you have to, often we always have to check whether our things are normalized correctly. So and this directly follows from these basic definition and from these two, if you want, postulate here, quantum mechanics. Okay. This is also often written as a Wronskian between the modes. All right, the factor of two, again, a slight things that may be unusual is this 1/√2 here. Many people just to like put that into the VK, which is a fine way to do it. And if you do, then this 2i here would be something different, you know, just different factors of 2, but that's just conventions. All right? And so, in fact, so if you just take the flat space modes and you demand that they're normalized, you'll find that the constant C just has to be up to a phase. So C square goes like 1/(ωk). Okay? And so usually the phase we don't care, so we just say, just goes 1/√(ωk), and then the full flat space mode are 1/√(ωk) e minus I omega t kt. Okay. So this is a review of flat space. Okay. So these are the modes in flat space, and any question about the flat space? Sorry. All right, so now where does this ambiguity in the number of, so I told you last time, well, we could have chosen a different expansion. Instead of doing e to the minus I omega t, I could have chosen differently. Essentially here, you're just saying that solution to this equation, there's not just this one, there's also the complex conjugate. So this is a solution to the Klein-Gordon equation, but so is, you know, e to the plus I omega kt. So there is the general solution should really be a combination of the Klein-Gordon equation. Should really just be a general so VK. Oh, and not one thing. Almost always, the modes end up being only a function of the norm of the vector. This is essentially follows for whenever you study a case where the spacetime has rotational symmetry, then your modes are only going to be a function of the norm. Okay. In principle, it can be the norm. You can break rotational symmetry, and then you'll have some vector dependence here. But almost all cases we'll do in this class, the modes end up being just a function of the norm. Okay. But yeah, so you could have written in general any modes here as normalize them, say, with omega k here, as some alpha k. So I'm just saying that the solution to the Klein-Gordon equation in general could have been any of the positive and negative frequency mode. And these coefficients alpha k and beta k are not completely arbitrary, because we still have to satisfy this normalization condition, right? So demanding that this is still properly normalized, you find that actually alpha, the norm of alpha minus the norm of beta must be equal to 1. Okay? Beta k here. Again, in general, these could be vectors, but now I'll be a bit less careful with my vectors, because essentially always the modes here end up being only function of the norm. So, but in principle, if you do this completely generally, this should all be vector scale, but let me just do it for a norm for now. So this is, so in general, so I could have chosen any one of those modes. Instead of starting with the natural negative frequency, I could have started with any combination. Okay? And the idea is just that in flat space, all inertial observers would agree that on this time coordinate t here, and they would say, this is my negative frequency mode, and I'll just use that. I'll just put, you know, beta equal to 0, and I'll put alpha equal to 1. And I'll define the annihilation operator this way and count particle that way. But and this is, so there's something special about flat space, like we discussed last time. There's a global time-like Killing vector. But the point is, even in such a symmetric space-time, if you're not an inertial observer, you will not agree. You will not find this mode a particularly good one to define your notion of particles. So this is the Unruh effect. So let me show you. Let's start looking at that. So this is a bit of a recap from last line. Kind of high, huh? All right. Hopefully, everybody can see, right? Yeah. And this one goes up. All right. So let's start now the little bit more fun part, the Unruh effect. And this is something, by the way, that has not been verified experimentally yet, but we hope they will be soon. So it's something that, you know, this. The point, though, is, and maybe this is a good exercise, is that this is the particle production that's coming from when you accelerate an observer is still very small. All right, so what do we do? First of all, the problem can be a bit hard to track down. And here, I want to really give you like quite a bit of the steps. So we will simplify the situation by looking to a 1 plus 1 dimensional space-time. 1 plus 1d, OK? And now, and it's just flat space, so it's a very simple metric. All right, and as you've seen, I can define a null coordinate u. Let me actually do this. Let me do this in a clear fashion. So I have coordinate t and x, and I can define null coordinate t minus x and v t plus x. And when you choose this set of coordinates, then the metric in flat spaces become du dv. As you've seen on Monday in your tutorial, this null coordinates are always very, very useful. I can compactify the space by writing u as a tangent of 2, u prime is a tangent of u, and v prime, same thing. And then on the, so while u and v runs from minus infinity to infinity, these guys have a finite range. So because the tangent goes between minus pi over 2 to pi over 2, these guys goes between minus pi and pi. Okay. And then often it's useful to, so when you do this transformation, you find that the new metric in this new set of coordinates is some somewhat annoying factor in front. U prime dv prime. So it's completely similar to the flat space one, except for an overall factor. So these two metrics here are conformally related to each other in the sense that this metric is equal to this one just up to an overall function of u and v in front. Okay, so these are conformally, well, this is the same metrics. No, not. Yeah, this is the same metric in different coordinate system. But what I can do, but yeah, just up to a factor in front. And then we can do a conformal transformation where we rescale the metric say, this way. Goes to a new metric, g bar, which is equal to omega squared x. And when you do that, you can always just get rid of this factor in front and then just define a new metric after a conformal transformation to be just du dv prime by just choosing appropriately. I mean, you just cancel exactly the factor. Now, this metric is different from this one. This is not really flat space. It's conformally related. I mean, this metric is different from this original one with u prime and v prime defined this way. So they're really different metrics. But the point is that in many cases, it's very useful to work with this, you know, this metric here where u prime and v prime are finite in range. Yes. Should there be a minus sign in front of which one? With my convention, so this guy should be reversed. X minus t and x plus t. Thank you. All right, and then you get some Minkowski space. And then we can write a Penrose diagram for this. Let me write it here. It could just be, I just use the extended version. This is just our little flat space here, where u prime here is minus pi, which means u is minus infinity, and u prime here is pi, and u is plus infinity. Okay? And in this diagram, light rays travel at 45-degree angle. Now, is there any question about Penrose diagram? Or we'll use somewhat very simple ones. And today, we're just doing flat space, but we'll do flat space for different observers. And we'll see that an accelerated observer does not, only sees a part of flat space. All right. OK, so let's consider an accelerated observer. And I'll rewrite this. I'm going to do my change of coordinate system, so let me write it here. Tx is, u. And here, so now let's look at an accelerated observer. So let's suppose that Bob is doing nothing. It's sitting in flat space, and he's just all over this diagram. And now Alice is going to be in the constant acceleration. So we don't know proper time the usual way, t tau, such that d tau equal ds. And so our four velocity, dx alpha d tau. And we want to look at a trajectory where the acceleration, this is just x dot here. So dot is derivative with respect to tau. And the acceleration is just x dot dot mu. And I want this to be constant. That is, I want that a mu to be a constant a square. So if I write this equation here, this is just write it in terms of this x dot dot here. It means I'm taking x dot dot of 0 plus x prime prime. No, x dot dot again. 1, if you want, of equal to a square. OK, so I have the x0 coordinate, which is just time, taking 2 derivatives with respect to proper time, plus, again, this is dot again, the x coordinate square. OK, so this is just saying that if you have an accelerated observer in flat space, it's going to live on some hyperbola, right? You can solve for this. So x naught, if I write this, this is minus t dot dot plus x dot dot. So I call x naught t and x1 x. So the solution to this is just t equal 1 over a sinh of a tau, and x equal 1 over a cosh of a tau. Right? If you take 2 derivatives with respect to proper time, minus 2 derivative here, you get sinh minus cosh, sinh square minus cosh square, and then you get this hyperbolic behavior. Okay. So let's plot this. So this is the trajectory of Alice. X and t, I'm just in 2 dimension, and the light rays are going this way, and Alice is being has a constant acceleration a, and so she's living on a trajectory like this. Okay, the distance from the origin here is 1 over a. Is a. No, 1 over a. I was right. Okay. So one of the things you see right away here is that Alice, on this trajectory, there are some observers here, say a point here, P, that cannot communicate with her. So she effectively has an horizon, because there are people who cannot communicate with Alice. At least people here cannot send her signal. OK. So an accelerated observer essentially sees an horizon. And as we'll see, when you have an horizon, actually, this is where you get particle production in a very special kind. So the idea is we want to do the mode expansion in the normal flat space coordinate, say, where Bob's living. And then we want to find a good coordinate system for Alice. So this is, and we want, so what we want is a coordinate system where Alice is an inertial observer for Earth. Yeah, so we want to find a co-moving coordinate system. Alice. So we want a coordinate system called C0 and C1, where in this coordinate system, Alice will not be moving. C1 equals 0. And then she would just be moving in proper time, if you want. So C0 would just be equal to the proper time. Okay. So this means she would be in her coordinate system. She would be going nowhere, just evolving in time. Okay. So what we need to do to relate to find what the particles that Alice would see is to just find the coordinate transformation between these guys and the original guy. So I have C0 here and C1. It's a very simple problem. Am I going? All right. Questions? Set up. And so let's do a simplifying assumption. Let's assume that the coordinate system, that the two coordinate systems are conformally related to each other. So let's assume, right there. Let's assume that du, dv, and then a new coordinate system. So this is my original one. Will be, and then I want to find a coordinate transformation to a new coordinate system. But the new coordinate system, I also want to express it in this way. So it has to be conformally related to the previous one. General, that's not always true, but let's assume that this is true. And then just start with this assumption and see whether we can find a coordinate system. Okay. So in fact, what this means is that my coordinate transformation must be of the form that u is a function of u tilde and v is a function of v tilde, but there's no cross term. So I don't get du tilde square. Okay. So I'm going to define then this u tilde and this v tilde in the very same way, so C1. I think it's right. Hope that's right. Sorry. I think I'll change this. Does it matter for anything? No. I still get the same signs. OK, I don't know why I had them inverted again. Sorry about that. That's going to be a little just a convention here, but I think, yeah. OK, so C1 is going to be minus C0 here. I want a minus sign and C1 plus C0. All right. And I want to find the coordinate transformation. But first, let's look at what these coordinates looks like for Alice. So she wants C1 to be 0 and C0 is tau. So this is just minus tau. And this one here is just tau. Well, for this coordinate system, the trajectory of Alice is what? So x plus t is the sum of these two guys. So if you add a cosh plus a shinch, they cancel. So x, so t going to be, or let's write it in fact in terms of t and x instead of u and v. So t is just 1 over a e to the a tau, and x is just 1 over a don't know why this is hard. Let's write it here. So U, okay, I was right. So U is just 1 over A e to the minus A tau, and V is 1 over A e to the A tau. So what I did is I literally just add x plus t and x minus t using a formula. Okay. All right, so I know what u and v in terms of taus are here, and I know what u and v tilde are in terms of taus. So it's pretty straightforward to find a transformation, right? I can just write, so and I'm let's do the assumption that u is only a function of u tilde. So then this guy must be 1 over a e to minus a, 1 over a e to the a u tilde. And this one must be 1 over a e to the a v tilde. Yes?
Shouldn't the power sign be different?
The power sign, sorry for this?
Yeah.
From adding x plus t?
I think so.
Let's see, sinh e minus. No, I think it's right. Or maybe. Is v minus u. What I've used to get this, I've used t as v minus u. Do I get my sign right? Ah. T is v minus u. OK, I don't see it. I think it should be right. But maybe I have a sign somewhere. Hopefully my signs will work out, but I hope I have all the convention right. U and C1, C1, they're OK, no? There's error sign somewhere not correct, or?
Maybe you make two different conventions for the U hat.
Still, yeah, which is not right, yeah.
The right hat.
Yeah, yeah, so that's OK, good. Let's take the same convention. And let's use this one for the moment. And I'm sorry if I'm convention changing over and over again. Is this what I had originally?
No.
OK. Sorry. OK, well, so let's do that, OK? So right, so I have this relation now. I can already guess that u in terms of u tilde and v in terms of v tilde. So I can just work out the coordinate transformation du is just e to the a u tilde du tilde, and dv is essentially the same, e to the a v tilde dv tilde. OK? And then following this, you find directly the coordinate transformation. Sorry if I got the sign wrong in this little derivation. That's, the answer is pretty simple. So at the end of the day, just you can check me up. OK, so this is then we see that the two metrics are indeed, you can find an easy change of coordinates, and the two metrics are conformally related to each other. Okay, I can rewrite this in terms of C not C1 and C0. And if I got all my signs right, which I think now are look good, this is just e to the 2a c1 minus d c0 squared plus d cc1 squared. Okay? And this one, if you write it in terms of t and x, it's just this. All right, so I started with flat space. I end up with flat space again, but there's a conformal factor. Okay, so this is the metric for which Alice is comoving. Okay. Now, one thing about this metric, so this actually what we call the Rindler metric or the Rindler wedge. One thing about this metric is that it doesn't cover all of flat space. Okay, so C1 runs from minus infinity to infinity, and so does C0. They're just normal coordinates. But you see that if I write it in terms of x plus t and x minus t, probably the easiest way to see this, if you write it in terms of x plus t, x minus t, that is, write it in terms of u or v, in terms of u, doesn't matter which one, you see that these guys here, in terms of this coordinate here, are always positive. So for when you change, so when you change this, u tilde again runs from minus infinity to infinity, v tilde is from minus infinity to infinity. But the idea is these guys, they're exponential of v and u, and they're always greater than 0 for all range of coordinates in the Alice coordinate system. Okay? So if you plot this on the Minkowski space, you're demanding that x essentially is always greater than the that whatever t, whatever the sign here. X always has to be greater than t. And so that puts you actually in this regime. So you only have one quadrant. So the coordinate system of Alice does not cover all of flat space. It only covers a quarter of it. And here it is. If you write the Penrose diagram, the Rindert wedge is this guy. So this coordinate system does not cover all of flat space. And this is part of why they won't agree on what the notion of vacuum is and what the notion of particle is. Any question on that? Oh. Sorry, it's a bit fast. Right. So that's the coordinate transformation. This is a new coordinate system. Also, it's easy to show in this coordinate system that Alice is an horizon. If I measure the physical, let's say Alice is at, let's go back to that coordinate system again and say, now not the Penrose diagram, but just normal x and t. So the idea is the slicing of Alice is you have these coordinate, these slices here are the constant c1. So c1 is equal to a constant here, and this is another constant. And then on these lines, C naught is increasing. So these are line of proper time. Okay. Let's say you put Alice at C1 equals 0. So C1 equals 0 will be some point here. C1 is infinity, it goes this way. And C1 equals minus infinity will be the curve which comes like right here on the light cone. Okay. So if you calculate the physical distance, say you put Alice right here, what's the physical distance between the horizon, say, and her is just going to be minus infinity to, say, 0 of, and then you need to integrate, you know, square root of g dx c1. And the square root of g here, because of that conformal factor, has minus infinity 0 e to the a c1. Okay. And so this is just, and there's a 1 over 8 maybe missing. Yeah, there's a 1 over 8. 0, yeah. Well, 1, or I think 1 over 8 if I define it. Well, it's finite. I think let's see what it is. Did I lose it? Okay. No, 1 over a. Sorry. When you do the integral. Okay. So there's a finite physical distance, and so a here is giving you an horizon. This is a. So Alice does not see all of space time. Okay, so now let's quantize the field in the spacetime. Let's quantize phi. Okay. And now this is also where the simplification to 1 plus 1d is really great, okay? Because we just did, I can write the action for the scalar field. Let's suppose that this is a massless field for the moment. So this is the integral of d t phi square plus d dt dx, 1/2 here. Okay. Or I can rewrite this in the uv coordinates as 2 in the integral of just du phi dv phi. Now, there's a bit of magic you probably have seen already that in 1 plus 1 dimension, a massless field like this one, say m equals 0, phi is conformal. It's a conformal symmetry. This is a very important fact, obviously, like in string theory, where you're doing the theory on the world sheet. So phi is a conformal field. So what that means is that what happens is that if I do, the action should be really like g mu nu dx phi, d mu phi d mu phi square root of g. And if I do a conformal transformation of the metric, in 1 plus 1 dimension, it exactly cancels. Because you know the square root of g here cancels exactly with the inverse of the metric. So we know already that the action, so this is the action for Bob, the action for Alice is going to be exactly of the same form, du tilde phi, dv tilde phi. This is for Alice. And you can just work it out, because it doesn't matter that there's an extra function in front of the metric. It doesn't show up in the action. This is because we're in 1 plus 1 dimension. If you add more than 1 plus 1 dimension, then the square root of g will have extra factor of the conformal thing. Then the problem will be more complicated. And as you can see, actually, you'll see now it looks how simple, but actually even in this very simplified 1 plus 1 setup, the system can get quite complicated. Okay. So the action is exactly the same in 1 plus 1 dimension. So obviously, we can just do the same. We'll just do it once, and we'll be done for both. Just need to change u and v. The equation of motion can be rewritten like this: du dv equals 0. This is the same as the Klein-Gorman equation, right? And the solution in general is phi is some left movers plus some right mover. Remember that u is, hopefully getting the sun right, x plus t, and v is x minus t, or the reverse, whichever one you call left moving or right moving. Okay, and this is the same equation that Alice sees, except that now you replace this by u tilde and v tilde. Okay, and so then we can just, and the solution to this guy will just, the solution to this equation will just be the simplest, could be e minus I omega u. But it also could have some e to the I omega u, you know, some left and right. And then you can do the same here as e to minus I omega v, or e to the I omega v. These are what the solution to the Klein-Gorman equation. Okay. It's useful, in fact, to divide always a problem into left moving and right moving. The problem splits completely. So we could just consider, so at the end of the day, actually, the problem is just one dimensional. We can forget about t and x and just do the problem for u and then do the problem for v. Okay. So I can write, this one does not go right, u operator phi as the integral over, so this is my integral over mode. So this is flat space. So I already know what the normalization is. It's just 1 over square root of 2 omega. I'm say a minus omega left plus a plus left, then plus left moving or right moving. Yeah. So this is my mode expansion. So normally we don't, well, up to, you know, before I didn't have left and right moving. So what I did is I separated my, normally I have just ak minus. Okay. In one dimension, this is just this vector here is just ak plus a sign. Okay, it's either, so it has momentum k, and it's either positive or negative, depending. So it's just a direction. Okay, it's just a number and a sign. But normally, when you create a particle, you're telling me what the sign is. So here what I'm doing is I'm saying, let's separate this into a left mover, so I'm just, and let's call k omega because this is, they're the same here, k, right from that. Because I'm doing mass equals 0, so omega and k are the same thing. And what I'm saying, just divide this into one where it's positive. Let's call this, say, left mover. So let's call this right mover here. And then plus there will be another right mover. And then there will be the creation operator that goes with it. Okay? And the idea is that I can just then forget about the right mover and just do the left movers, and they're going to be, it's an exact copy. Okay? And note the only thing is now dw here, dk, I'm only integrating from 0 to infinity. So this is positive. Okay? If you wanted, you could have done this without the left mover and the right mover. Then the only difference is this would be a minus infinity, and then you just group them back together. So I hope this is not confusing. We're not going to use left moving and right moving so much. But sometimes people do. And when you're doing 1 plus 1 dimension, it's particularly simpler to think in terms of left and right moving. OK? And so now I'll just forget the right moving. Just look at the left moving and so forth. All right. So so then I have a D. Whoops. DDU, so these guys here, I should write this. If you think of this, so I have the D, let's call this, capital A, just to remind you. So DDU of this capital A is plus minus I omega capital A. Okay, so these are, again, and this would be plus minus, depending, it's a creation annihilation operator. So this, our eigenfunction of the DDU operator. Okay. And then the right movers would be eigenfunction of the DDV operator. Okay. Any questions? All right, so and then we define, so Bob defines this, and he just says, now let's define my vacuum to be E omega, this is Bob, equals 0. This is his definition of his vacuum. Yes. Question? No.
What does it say? A minus k equals ak and something in
sine. So I mean, in one dimension, in 1 plus 1, the vector k is a norm plus a plus or a minus, depending what's the sign. So just tell me, if you want, you could write this vector k as k plus give me a plus minus. Give me a sign. That's all I'm saying. So this is the notion between left, when you divide a mode into left and right movers, you're just saying, let's just write it in terms of only the norm, but then put the whether it's moving in the t minus x direction or negative, so right movers or left movers, that's the sign here. And for now, I'm just going to consider the left movers, and I'm going to drop the subscript. So this really should be written for one for left movers, and you should have another one for right mover. And together, they're the same condition as saying that the whole a minus k is 0. But I'll drop this, and I'll just do one copy for the rest, okay? Because you can just do the two copies together. So this is the natural definition of vacuum and fat space. Now let's do what Alice will do. Well, Alice will do exactly the same thing, right? Because she lives du tilde v tilde. It's the same equation, the same action. Everything is exactly similar. And so this is exactly the same equation for Alice. But let's just first of all, let's rename the omega, the dummy variable here, capital omega. And then I have creation operator, e to the minus I omega u tilde plus to the minus, to the plus e to the I, u tilde. Okay. So Alice defines the same way, but she decides, she says, well, b minus omega on my vacua is 0. Okay. And then the question is, okay, well, is the vacuum of Bob and the vacuum of Alice the same thing?
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed what you said about the DDU.
Yep.
What did you say?
So what I mean to say is that this, let's call this guy A, this capital A operator here. So this one is really time independent. And so all the time dependence and x here, dependence is here. So what I mean to say is this is eigenvector of DDU. This is the analog of what I did last time of DDT U A plus minus vector. So this was what we did last time in 3 plus 1 dimension. And so I'm just saying this is the same thing that's happening here. The left movers are eigenvectors of the killing vector in the u direction. And then the right movers, you'll just replace u by v. Other questions? All right, so let's find what Alice and Bob, or what the difference between the two vacuoles. So we want to find a relation between the b's and the a's, between the b creation operator and the a. Okay. So we want to find a relation. So the most general relation should be of this type. I'm just going to integrate over all omega of, well, 0 to infinity. So not really all of them. Times some coefficient times a minus. So let's assume, actually, this is not true that there was always exist a relation of this type. This is a Bogle-Yubov transformation. It's interesting that this is only possible, I'm not going to show this, but this is only possible when you go from pure state to another pure state. But the idea is if you have a Bogle-Yubov transformation, then there will be a relation of this type. And let's see whether we can, in this case, you know, this is going to work. There's a transformation between this annihilation operator and these guys. And in general, should be some random ratios. And the alphas and betas, again, are not arbitrary because we still have the b minus times b plus is normalized. And so is a minus and a plus. These guys are normalized. And so these two together imply that the integral from 0 to infinity of d omega should I be careful? Omega prime, omega star. So these, the normalization, the fact that b minus and a minus are sort of normalized in this way, means that if I just plug this in here, b minus, b dagger here, you just take the complex conjugate of this. So you get alpha star, beta star, and you reverse these two. So you take the complex conjugate of this, put that in here, use these two relations here, you'll find that there's a normalization condition between these alpha and beta coefficients. This is a Bogle-Yubov transformation. The alphas and betas are not completely arbitrary. And so the idea is to try to find what these alphas and betas are for this problem. Question on that? OK. So let's look at Alice. So Alice is right here. So I found a relation. So I just postulate essentially a relation between the b minus and these guys. So let me just substitute what I just defined for b minus in here. Okay. So in the Alice expression for phi, for Alice, phi is some expression in terms of b minus and b plus. Then what you do is you just substitute this relation here. Let's call it star. You just plug in star in here, in this expression here. And so you have to replace B minus, but you also have to replace B dagger or B plus here. Just take the complex conjugate. Okay? And then what you can do is just read off the A minus coefficient. Just find what A minus is proportional to in this step. Okay? So let me just give you the answer. This is a couple of lines, but not too bad. Right, so you just read off what A minus is. And so for Alice, when you express B minus in terms of A minus, you find that the coefficient in front of A minus, so if I look at just the coefficient, A minus coefficient, is just, you can guess this easily, it's just d omega, d capital omega, d small omega times, in front, square root of 2 omega times okay. So this is for Alice. Well, Bob, I don't have to do anything. The A minus coefficient, I can just read it directly. It's the integral over omega times e to minus I omega u. Okay? So this is what Bob, you know, the coefficient in front of A minus for in Bob's mode expansion, and this is the coefficient of A minus for Alice in terms of these unknown alphas and betas. And so we can just ask, okay, well, let's say we want those to be equal or want to know what the relation between them is. So we can just solve just matching these two things together, just demanding that this is equal to that. Okay, and try to find what the alphas and betas are in terms of the coordinates transformation. Is the logic clear, what I'm trying to do here? Okay. So, yeah, so you just match this and that. And so what the equation you get is the following. U, so the integral over omega is everywhere, so we can just forget about it. What we're trying to say is that this is equal, this should be equal to 0 to infinity. And now, yeah, let me call it omega prime, just changing the name of the alpha omega prime omega e to the minus I omega prime u tilde. Minus okay. So this is the relation that we must have, okay, for Alice and Bob to sort of agree on what the coefficient in front of A minus. This is a relation, okay. I can solve for alpha and beta a simple way. I could just, so the way I want to do it is just, you can just multiply by e to the omega u tilde, and you can integrate over all u tilde. Okay, so that is d u tilde from minus infinity to infinity. Okay, so you see that when you do that, the idea is that if you integrate over, when I multiply here by e to the omega u tilde, this here is just oscillating. This is e to the I. So omega, importantly, omega is always positive. Okay, and so omega plus omega prime u tilde, if I integrate over all u, this is going to integrate to 0, this guy, because it oscillates all the time. And this one would integrate to 0 except when omega is equal to omega prime. Just using the relation that d u tilde I omega minus omega prime is a delta function. Okay. So when I do this trick, I just kill the beta and I just get the alphas. And I can do the inverse to get the equation for the betas in terms of the alphas. Okay. And then you can just solve. So. And then you'll get this like very ugly relation, looking relation, but let me write it down. So if I do this process for alpha, I get the alpha omega needs to be equal to the square root of the two frequencies, 1 over 2 pi. Then there's a minus sign for alpha. So this is the boring question. So this is how I end up solving for alpha omega. Okay, and you can do the same for beta. This is not so useful because there's two coordinate systems here. Okay, there's u and u tilde. But I know what the relation between u and u tilde is. That was the first part of this whole program. So u tilde is 1 over a log of ua. So I can change coordinate from u tilde to u and express all of this in terms of u, in terms of Bob's coordinate. So doing the change of coordinate, just change coordinate in the integral, you get this is minus 1 over 2 pi. Du e minus I omega u. And then you get plus I omega over a times log of u. All right, so this is, you have to do this somewhat nasty looking integral over u, and you would have the answer. Okay. Fortunately, you don't have to do the integral. You could just leave it in this form. If you want, you can do the integral, but you can just leave it in this form. But we won't do the integral. You can repeat the same process for beta. And the point is, beta is exactly the same, except that it's a plus sign here. And so let me write it, same plus sign there, omega over omega. And it's a plus sign in this guy here, I omega u times or plus I capital omega a log of u a. Question?
Is the integration over u tilde or is it over u?
The integration is over u tilde. So I change, because I do a change of coordinates between u tilde and u. I could have probably done the inverse too. It's not. This is just a dummy variable. It's nothing meaningful between me choosing u or u tilde. Okay. So this is the key. So now we know how to relate Allison's and Bob coordinate system. These are the alphas and betas. And so you see, it's quite messy, even for a simple system like this one. This is 1 plus 1 dimension. This is probably the simplest case you could do. And even then, the unruh effect is, it's a messy equation. But there's a nice trick you can do. And I'll give you the answer now quickly. But next time, I'll restart from there and rederive it better because we're running out of time. But there's just a very nice relation. So let me just give you the physics. You can maybe play with it and find where this comes from. Let me just give you the physics. And this time, I'll recap this. Okay. Questions? So the idea is that the reason why this formula is not so useful, what happened is there's a nice relation between alpha and beta. You can just do a change in minus signs for u here. And the idea is when you change minus signs for u, essentially these two expressions go to each other, except that you get a log of minus 1. And this log of minus 1 is I pi. So it means that these guys are essentially almost the same up to a factor of e to the minus pi. So the relation you can show from these two equations, you can show that alpha squared is beta squared e to the minus 2 pi omega over a. And this is a crucial aspect of this whole problem. This goes under the name in thermal field theory as the equation for detailed balance. And if you're good with thermal field theory, which most people don't. You could stop there and say, hey, that means that Alice sees a thermal spectrum of particle. Now, next time I'll show a little bit more in detail why this implies a thermal spectrum. But just to give you a flavor, this detailed balance, so what you do in thermal field theory, I won't do much of that in this class, but you can define just the density operator, which you may have seen. It's the integral, say, between two state. Let me look at the two state. Psi n e to minus beta h psi n. Have you seen something like this, the density matrix? Right? So this is what you'll do in a normal system. And let's say these guys are eigenstate of h. So this would just be some coefficient times e to minus beta, say, e m. And detailed balance, a system is in thermal equilibrium when the reverse process, or the probability of going from m to m, is equal to probability of going from m to n. Okay. And this, well, you can see that this will, so let's say this is coefficient 1 here. If you just reverse the two state, you'll find that this implies directly that C1 over C2 is equal to e to minus beta En minus Em. So that is, the probability of going up versus the probability of going down are, you know, of moving from one state to the next or moving or the reverse process are related by a Boltzmann factor, which is just proportional to the difference in energy between the two states. Okay. This is another way to phrase a detail balance. So when you have a density matrix which satisfies this, this is essentially almost the definition of a thermal state. Now look at that. This is like, if you take C1 and C2 as these alpha square and beta square, this is exactly the same expression. Okay, and I should really end. You can see that delta E, well, delta E is just omega, right? It's just the difference in frequencies. And so you can read the temperature. You can read beta here is 1 over T. So you can read the temperature from this equation very simply. Okay. I will repeat this. Sorry, I'm going over time. But I just wanted absolutely to write this equation. Next time I'll get back to it. But directly from this formula, you can read the temperature. And so Alice sees a thermal spectra with temperature proportional to her acceleration divided by 2 pi. All right, sorry for going over. Any questions? I'll restart from here next time and also calculate the number of particles and these kind of things. And So this is an example of Bogoyev transformation. We'll do a bit more as the course goes on. But this example really contains all the basic stuff. All right, thanks.